You're listening to KPFA 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara County, and across the globe at kpfk.org. Pacifica Radio for all the surfing, California and beyond.
Too, I can't
get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight.
Here's the theme music, Jim.
So let's get going. All right. Well, good afternoon, friends and listeners. Both, I hope. This is the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with my co-host, Marina Hall. Maria, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good.
You're good? Well, then let our audience know what's in store for them if they stay tuned. I hope they do.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have fun today. We're going to be talking about how Tesla has become the latest lightning rod in our storm of political controversies, resulting in mass boycotts of the brand on the one hand and turning the U.S. president into a car salesman on the other hand. How did we get here and where are we going? Our guest is Cliff Tasner of Americans for Democratic Action SoCal. And then stay tuned, because in our second half hour, we'll be talking to Ron Gochez about the Community for Self-Defense Coalition and other efforts to stave off the fear and panic that are being leveled upon immigrants and the rest of us right now by the federal government.
Oh, it does sound like a good show. I know I've worked on it. You've worked on it. I think we feel pretty confident about it. Why don't you introduce Cliff, our first guest?
Sure. Let me jump right into segment one. Well, you know, the inventor and electrical engineer Nikola Tesla was ahead of his time when he conducted groundbreaking experiments with electricity about 100 years ago. But even he could not have predicted headlines like those in today's news, such as from NBC, Trump turns the White House lawn into a Tesla showroom. Or from Wired magazine, Donald Trump bought a $90,000 Tesla with 37 recalls against it. And then on BBC, Trump says anti-Tesla protesters will face hell. Well, I dare to say Nikola Tesla is spinning in his grave, and I have a feeling so is his famous friend, one of our country's greatest satirists, Mark Twain. And indeed, most of the news headlines in 2025 could be mistaken for absurdist satire or dystopian science fiction, and I'm reminded daily of old Twilight Zone episodes where the protagonists find themselves trapped in a no-win situation of their own making because they gave in to greed, fear, and self-interest. Indeed, human history, literature, economics, philosophy, and our own life experiences are full of cautionary tales about the fact that when we stop listening to our conscience or looking out for our broader community, the end of the story is not a happy one. But what if, like now, we're trapped inside of the story? How can we work to avert total catastrophe for our planet, our society, our families, and ourselves? And from where can we find courage when so many of our leaders are afraid to speak truth to power? Well, history can inform us, and so can our next guest, Clifford Tasner. Clifford is the president of Americans for Democratic Action SoCal, and he's helping organize a rally and protest in front of Tesla this weekend. Oh, no. So Clifford began his life of political activism back in the 80s, and he also writes and produces songs for the political satire group The Billionaires that many of us remember from the 2000s, and works as a composer and orchestrator in the film music industry. He also serves as a delegate to the California Democratic Convention and has been a member of ADA SoCal Board since 1999. Clifford Tasner, welcome to the Lawyers Guild Show.
Well, thank you, Maria. It's good to be here. There's one bastion of sanity on the radio dial. You know, it's gratifying. I mean, we have these little oases of leftist thought where we're confronting people who have a coherent vision of reality and how we can navigate these tough waters that we're in. And you know, these are dire times. You know, I wake up in the middle of the night you know, I'm trying to figure out how to get out of this. And a lot of the time, the best I can do is I get magical powers. You know. Mm-hmm. And I get the power to like psychically transform people's minds so they stop being just the dangerous, pathological, you know, uncompassionate, dangerous, you know, frightening beings that they are. And, you know, it's not very useful thinking, but it's sometimes the best we could do. But we have to try, you know, we have to try, you know, the struggle, you know, as progressives, as leftists, is something, it's a lifelong struggle. You know, and we carry this torch with us, and at some point we drop the torch because our life ends, and somebody else won't pick up that torch. They'll have a new torch that is their torch, and we may not win, we may not move the needle as much as we'd like to, but we have to try. Otherwise, we're part of the problem. And I once wrote a song I wrote a musical called "Adventures in PR," and so there's this biotech company called Sinmente, modeled after Monsanto, and they're using blue whale DNA to produce super large fruits and vegetables. But of course, the pollen gets out of the plant, and all of a sudden, people's house plants are taking over and such. So people start protesting, and so the firm Sinmente, headed by a fellow named Gene Alter, hires the Prevara Cates PR firm. And they infiltrate, and at the end, the protagonist has been kind of betrayed by somebody that she thought was trustworthy, was actually a PR plant, and she sings a song called "All Hope Starts With Me."
Aww.
The basic, I want you to imagine the scenario: we're on a ship, and the ship has hit an iceberg, and there's water's coming in, and you and I get down to the poop deck or whatever the lower item. I'm not sure of the names of the decks. I've never been on, and I've never served on a ship. And you and I are like, we got to do something. This ship's taking in water. You know, we could all go under. So let's grab a bucket and let's start bailing. And somebody walks in and they're like, hey, what are you guys doing? Well, the ship's hit an iceberg. If we all bail, we can sail the ship and we can move the ship forward. Oh, you guys. There's no chance you guys are going to be able to solve this problem. I'm going up to the buffet table. Now I'm going to eat, you know. But the truth is that if we all grab a bucket, if we all unite, we all work together to try to bail water, we not only can solve the problem, we can actually move the ship forward into the future. And so the song is called All Hope Starts With Me. I can't have an expectation that someone else is going to pick up a bucket unless I'm picking up a bucket. And this is the thing. And I think this is the, you know, why has Jim spent his entire life trying to make the world a more just and equitable place? Why? You know, all signs to the contrary, you know, that most people can't be engaged, aren't engaged. We're not fighting a losing struggle, but we only can win if we start, if we do it, if we commit. And that's what I find among the activists that I know. I'm so proud to know, because people are carrying this energy and this passion because we have to try. We have to do what we can. And all hope starts with me. And so that's why I spent my whole adult life as an activist as well. So,
amen to that. Thank you.
Oh, I love it. Well, let's start out with a personal question, if you don't mind.
No, let's go.
Were you surprised when Trump won his second term?
I was not the least bit surprised.
Okay, then please tell us why.
You know, and here's the thing. You know, I mean, you know, as a child, you know, my parents grew up in the Depression, and so there's this sense of Democrats good, Republicans bad, you know, and Nixon. The wake of Nixon. I was born in 1963. Richard Nixon. There was this kind of sense of, oh, we'll never have a president this bad again. You know, and there was this sense of Democrats good, Republicans bad. So, you know, Ronald Reagan became president. Well, Reagan bad, of course, very bad, and worse than Nixon, even like, you know, unbelievably worse. And we thought, oh, there can never be somebody worse than Reagan and his successor Bush. But then W came in, and then we get Donald Trump. And I feel like the parabolic trajectory is kind of heading toward the next Republican candidate is a flaming bag of dog turds. because that I just can't see it, just the logical movement from one thing to the other. But when I was in college, I went to Tufts University in the 80s, and I got involved with the, I was a delegate for the Democratic State Committee in Massachusetts working on the Mondale campaign, because Democrats good, Republicans bad. And then I moved out to California after I graduated, and I was a volunteer on the Dukakis campaign. And I still had this kind of sense. And by the time Bill Clinton came around, I didn't like him one bit. I did vote for him the first time. I started voting for Nader and third party candidates after that, you know, and every day I read the paper. And, you know, I when I came out to California, I became an activist. I was very involved in the pro-choice movement, defending women's clinics against attacks by Operation Rescue. And I sort of, when Clinton became president, there was a kind of sense of relief. Okay, it's a Democrat. And then I would read the paper every day and get angrier and angrier as Clinton was really the third term of Ronald Reagan, or the fourth term, really. The fourth term of Ronald Reagan was Bill Clinton. And I began to realize, you know, it's not, you know, I am sort of, I don't do blue team, red team. I'm a registered Democrat. I'm a leftist Democrat because I like being involved in voting in primaries and such. But I'm completely fed up with them. I rarely vote for the presidential candidates, and they're completely bought and paid for by this. We have two parties in this country. We have a fascist corporate party and a centrist corporate party. And so the Democratic Party does a lot of performative stuff of, oh, we care about people of color. We care about LGBT. You know, I remember that stunt after the death of, what was it, Michael Brown they put on kente cloth. The Democratic elected officials put on kente cloth and got on their knees. Why not actually do something about the racism that is built into our supremacist system? You know, so I watched Kamala Harris. I watched Joe Biden. You know, actually, he was better on some things than I thought he'd be. And then he supported this horrific genocide in Gaza. It is a heartbreaking thing. And I watched them lose the election. I watched them, you know, so I talked to so many people who are just like, I just can't bring myself to vote for Genocide Joe or Holocaust Harris. You know, she didn't find, you know, when she first was chosen, I thought, well, she's the logical choice because she can take all the money he's made because she's on the ticket. And she initially said a few good progressive things. And then her brother-in-law, who works for Uber, counseled her to make nice with the corporations. And she found a way to not find a bit of shadow between her and Joe on Gaza, on militarism, wants our military to be lethal, and corporatism. She's campaigning with Liz Cheney. They wouldn't let a Palestinian speak. And I just want to say, I'm a proud American Jewish man. My family lost 20 members in the Holocaust. My great-grandfather was beaten to death by a Christian mob in the year 1900, Easter Sunday, you know, in the great Bialystok pogrom. So I am sensitive to what fascism is, what genocide is, and if my own people are engaged in it, I'm also calling them out on it. It's not enough. It's not enough. And it's really important for American Jews to speak out against what's going on, that we're not on board with this, you know.
Absolutely.
I watched Kamala Harris do this, and she's campaigning with Liz Cheney, and she's in Michigan, and then they sent Bill Clinton to lecture Arabs in Michigan that they should be grateful. And I just said, oh my God, she's going to lose this thing. You know, and I've kind of, the reason I became an activist, because I saw what happened to my family, was to try to fight fascism. And sadly, I feel like I kind of failed this time. I didn't, oh, I mean, no. Not on me. It's not all on me, but you all have to take responsibility, you know.
Well, we got so much to cover. No. I don't think you should feel that way at all. But we have so much to cover, Cliff.
Okay, sorry.
Now, going back even a little further than you just did, which I think was helpful, the seeds, are they not, for the current political predicament really goes back even further. I'm thinking in particular of the Powell memo from the early 1970s. I'm thinking of the Supreme Court decision in Buckley versus Viejo, and it was in 1976.
That's right.
But just talk to us about both of those and why that is of significance today.
So people don't think a lot about...
Do keep in mind that we've got a lot to cover.
Gotcha. Okay. People don't think a lot about Lewis Powell, but Lewis Powell was one of the lawyers for the tobacco industry when the tobacco heads of the tobacco industry were testifying before Congress that their product didn't cause cancer, Lewis Powell was the strategist behind that entire and so he wrote a memo in 1971 in reaction to Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader had published Unsafe at Any Speed and had citizen activists who were making changes in communities and demanding accountability. And suddenly cars had seatbelts, you know. And so Lewis Powell was terrified of this because he was a corporate tool. He was a corporate lawyer. And he wrote the Powell memo saying, you know, what we need to do what the left is doing. We corporations need to take over America and take over its politics, take over its media, take over its education system. And we need to create a corporate oligarchy here in America. And Nixon was so impressed with him that he made him a Supreme Court justice. And he was instrumental in the Buckley-Vallejo decision. After Nixon, there were some very strong campaign finance reform laws. And Powell, I mean, sadly, a number of fairly progressive liberal justices signed onto it. But Powell was the author. And it basically suggested that money is speech. And briefly hearkening back to 1866, the Santa Clara case of the U.S. versus the railroads, and the decision, the clerk wrote in the margin, corporations are people. And that is where, you know, money is speech, corporations are people. This is completely a canard that was put into the margins where the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights aren't even accorded to human beings in America, but the corporations have them. So yeah. Lewis Powell wrote this, and it started then, you know, and sadly, Jimmy Carter was a great ex-president. He deregulated the airline industry. He was anti-union. He was not pro-union. He would not pass a union bill that got rid of right to work in the South, and he paved the way for Reagan to become president, and that was the beginning of undoing of everything. And as a result, it became about corporate money. And Bill Clinton came in with the third way, the Democratic Leadership Council, and the idea that the Democrats should do the same favors for corporations, and they'll be nominally slightly better on some of the issues that they care about, but they started undoing every aspect of the New Deal. Well, any vestiges of the New Deal are in the toilet now, and Elon Musk is the guy doing it. You know, Elon Musk is an immigrant. You know, I love immigrants. All right, my grandparents are immigrants. You know, we're immigrants. And Elon Musk is an immigrant. And immigrants always bring a little taste of their culture to America when they come. And Elon Musk brought apartheid. He came from South Africa and brought apartheid right here to us. Sure. And he's doing it. So, this is a logical succession, you know. And the other thing I want to say, a lot of what's happened on the left is we would pass something. We'd see the Voting Rights Act passed, or we'd see some movement toward gay rights or women's rights, you know, abortion rights. And there's a tendency of those of us, because mainly people on the left aren't on a power trip, don't want to control other people. We just kind of want to get back to playing our guitars and planting our flowers in the garden. But while we were relieved that we'd accomplished something and that we had this sense, the Martin Luther King said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Well, it doesn't bend toward justice. We don't bend it. And as a result, while we were feeling good that we'd accomplished all these changes that happened in the 60s and early 70s, what happened? The right wing, Richard Mellon Scafee, funded these think tanks in universities, and the Chicago economists, you know, Milton Friedman, they have been working tirelessly to bring about this coup, this corporate fascist, Christo-fascist oligarchy that we are now living in. And so we can just accept it and just go along with it, or we can fight it. We can fight it, and that's what we're going to do on Saturday at 12 noon at the Tesla dealership in Santa Monica at Broadway and 3rd Street. We're going to protest Elon Musk, you know, because, you know, our Democratic Party leaders are quiescent. They're sitting around Hakeem Jeffries, who is also completely bought and paid for and should never, ever be Speaker of the House. And he has a chance of being Speaker of the House if there's ever any kind of elections again. He said, oh, let's keep our powder dry and let's wait. Let's wait till the something bad happens that we really want to react to. No, it's already happened. We have to react to every single thing. And what's interesting about Trump is Trump doesn't, he's completely post-ideological. He's like the emperor in the emperor's new clothes, or that little boy in the Twilight Zone who has the telekinetic powers and he zaps a man under the cornfield and somebody says, oh, that was a really good thing you did. He was a really bad man. Well, Trump is somebody who likes having smoke blown up his nether region. And so, and doesn't like when people are all angry. And so, as much as he hates us, if a lot of Americans start voicing their dismay, there are a number of things that they pulled back on. They fired some people. Oh, they rehired them the next day. They, you know, it's all very haphazard and all chaotic, but we have to stand up. We have to make our voices heard, and we can't wait for someone else to do it for us. So let's get out there on Saturday at noon, and let's protest at the Tesla dealership.
Please, yes. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, I wanted to talk a little more, to give a little bit more historical context.
Sure.
And that is, let's talk about the billionaires, but not the billionaires with actual money, the billionaires that are the satirical political group that was born back in the early 2000s when W, as you warmly call him, became president after a close and heated election. Tell us about that time period, how it relates to now. And then, of course, that was even before Citizens United, and how you were already kind of hearkening, hey, we're letting billionaires buy the elections.
That's right. We were actually not initially billionaires for Bush. We were billionaires for Bush or Gore. We were supported by an organization called United for a Fair Economy that highlighted the growing disparity between wealthy and poor people. And we had to be nonpartisan, but it really made sense because we were trying to highlight the fact that both parties were completely bought and paid for. And if you look at the campaign, Al Gore, I didn't actually know Al Gore was an environmentalist. I just knew he was a fairly conservative Democrat who really wanted to censor rock music. And when he debated George Bush, he kept five times I heard him say the phrase, "I agree with my opponent entirely." On space-based missiles, on the death penalty, and that was when I started supporting Ralph Nader because I am completely unapologetic. Ralph Nader didn't steal the election. Al Gore lost the election. He picked the most conservative Democrat he could to be his running mate, and he ran to the right. And it was only after he lost that I found out this guy's this great environmentalist. Could have run on that, you know? And so we became, you know, we created, I was brought in, and I started writing the funny songs to the billionaires. And in fact, KPFK has played a lot of my stuff over the years. And we even have a new album that's coming out sometime soon called Favorable Business Climate. And on the cover is going to be a little a polar bear on an ice cap with a bunch of oil derricks around it that are lit up with casino lights that say Trump on them.
Yeah.
I'm calling us now Trillionaires for Trump. And I'm going to put on my top hat and go to this protest and do a little bit of political satire, and because Elon can't make it because he's busy completely eviscerating everything good about our government. So I'm going to go speak on behalf. But it's, you know, billionaires seem like a lot. Now they really are becoming trillionaires. They have been consolidating money upwards into their pockets for so many years now. You know, working people in the 70s, working people are not making more than they made in the 70s, dollar for dollar. They're actually making less. And we're being distracted with the issue of somehow undocumented immigrants who put my grandparents, three of them were undocumented illegal immigrants, you know, people who came here with, you know, and snuck over the border because they needed a better life. And whenever I hear all this anger and rancor against people who are undocumented, I think, oh, they're talking about me too, you know. And so they distract us with a couple. There's five trans women participating in college sports in the country. And that's the reason why we can't have a progressive system with health care for all and everybody who wants to be in a union and tax the heck out of these very, very, rapacious billionaires who've been basically like very large bloated ticks sucking the blood of our body politic.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, Cliff, moving ahead, from our interview, we know that you truly believe in the power of people to fight tyranny, whether that be perpetrated by the government or other powerful forces. But what keeps you strong? A lot of people have said after Trump got elected the second time, oh, they just went to bed and covered them their head with the covers, you know, that kind of stuff. On the other hand, the street's been very active. We've seen really tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people all over the country getting into the streets, a lot of those young people. But you've been at it for a long time. What made you not cover your head with the blanket when Trump got elected a second time?
I think there's always a few minutes where you crawl into the corner and get into a fetal position and moan quietly. But, you know, I find that the thing that keeps you strong is activism. You know, if you do something, it's like planting a garden. Planting a garden is an inherently optimistic act. You know, I'm planting this seed because there's a belief I have that it's going to grow into something and flower and produce fruit. And so, you know, being inert is the thing that makes you depressed. And I think it's designed, this kind of apathy is built into this system to keep people feeling like there's no hope. And so many people didn't vote in this election. You know, it would have been an interesting thing if all the people who didn't vote actually voted for a third party candidate as a protest vote. It would have woken the heck out of both parties, you know.
Yeah.
And I keep saying heck because I know we're on the radio and I'm not allowed to talk like the stevedore that I actually am. I was a Teamster. I had a summer job as a Teamster as a kid, and I have a very sailor-like stream of profanity that comes out of my mouth when I'm not on KPFK. So, yes, it is the act of getting out there, the act of doing something that makes me feel alive and that something's possible. And, in fact, that's what happened to me in the 90s. I was reading the paper every day. I'd sort of taken a break from activism and getting angrier and angrier as I watched Bill Clinton just give away the store.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's when I joined Americans for Democratic Action, because there was a profile in the LA Weekly of all the progressive organizations in LA. By the way, you can go to adasocal.org and sign up. And our meetings are on Zoom and they're open, and get involved with the work we're doing, you know. But I joined 26 years ago, and because I wanted to be doing something. And it was the moment that you get involved, the moment you're with other like-minded people who really have a mission, we're all trying to make this change happen. It's very, very energizing. And so don't lose hope. You know, the act of doing something, the butterfly flaps its wings and there's a tsunami on the other side of the planet eventually. You know, we have to try. And the alternative is just giving into it. And in a way, you're becoming part of the problem. So
indeed.
I say, let's get moving. It's, you know, they tell you to walk every morning, get your heart going, helps your bowels. You know, I mean, it's just everything moves when you move. And so there it is. That's why we got to be part of a movement.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, tell us a little more about the Picket and Speak Out this weekend.
We've got all sorts of progressive organizations, ANSWER, Code Pink, the Lawyers Guild, Americans for Democratic Action. I mean, you have a list, I think, in front of you. I don't have it in front of me at the moment. But we are taking a stand, and we're hoping people join us. And we're hoping it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And we have, you know, here's the thing. We got to hit Elon where it hurts. And there's only one thing that hurts him: his stock going down, his people not buying his cars, his brand, his personal brand being dragged through the dreck. And so that's going to hurt him. That's going to hurt him. And I did a Trump could buy all the Teslas he wants. He's not going to buy enough to offset the fact that this brand is now toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And as is Twitter, as is X or whatever he calls it, you know.
Yeah, let's just be clear also. Thank you for that, Cliff. But the demonstration that Cliff is talking about, it starts at 12 noon on Saturday at the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica at Broadway. Broadway, at the corner of Broadway and the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica, is a Tesla dealership. So we thought that would be a good place to protest. And, of course, in doing that, we're protesting not only Tesla, but we're the car itself is not the issue. We're protesting, of course, Musk, and we're protesting Trump as well. I mean, they are a deadly duo at the moment, really deconstructing the American government, deconstructing the democracy which we uphold and try to uphold here. But I'm sorry, Cliff, go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, we should protest the car. We should protest that Cybertruck. It is the thing that I have seen Whenever I see them, I get chills. There's something sort of, it's really terrifying. It really, it's a car. If you wanted to design a car that says fascism on it, without actually painting the word fascism, it's that Tesla Cybertruck.
It is.
I understand the trunk closes on people's fingers. They call it the finger guillotine. Yes, come on out. I'm going to do a little fun stuff. I think a lot of people are going to be a lot more valiant and angry and, you know, and righteously indignant. But we have to be seen. We have to make our voices heard. And we've got to get some media coverage. And people need to see that not everybody is taking this. Not everybody's sitting in the corner in a fetal position with a blanket over their head, whimpering softly.
That's right.
We've got to fight.
Now, Cliff, if folks want to learn more about your group, you're the chair of the group.
ADASocal.org, ADASocal.org, and come to our meetings. We meet the last Tuesday of the month on Zoom in the evenings, and love to have you be part of the work that we're doing. And, you know, you bring your energy. The more energy just builds. The more people get involved, the more it's like collaboration. You bring more people into the mix, more good ideas happen, more passion, more joy. And we need joy and we need laughter. And I'm going to do my part to bring a little bit of that to the equation.
Well, you do, and I've heard you do it before, and it's quite wonderful. And I would urge everyone to come out and watch you do it and join the protest. That's really what Cliff is urging you to do. His contribution to it is something you'll enjoy, but I think you'll feel better. I know how many angry people are out there listening. Well, let me tell you something. You come out and join the demonstration. At the end of the day, you will feel better about yourself. You'll understand the kind of hopefulness that Cliff has been talking about. And Cliff Tasner, it's been a real pleasure, my friend, having you on the Lawyers Guild show today, as always. We have Cliff on every year when there are ballot measures on the ballot because he's so well-informed in the measures, and he gives us a progressive point of view about how you might want to consider voting on those. But today as well, once again, we thank you so much, and we'll see you on Saturday at noon.
Hasta el sábado.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. And now we're going to take a brief station identification break. Stay with us, my friends, because we're going to be back with Ron Goches. We're going to be talking about the fact that this is not a city that is laying down when the ICE officials come raiding through wanting to grab the people who cut our lawns and take care of our children and our friends, our immigrant sisters and brothers. So you stay tuned. We're going to talk about how this city is going to fight back in that regard.
The benefits of donating your used vehicle to KPFK include funding new and existing programming, as well as increasing community awareness. You also benefit by being able to reduce your taxable income. There's no need to deal with the hassles of selling it, and you support public radio in the process. To donate your vehicle, please call 877-KPFK-AUTO. That's 877-KPFK-AUTO.
And as promised, we are quickly back with you today. We had a short station ID break. You're listening close to KPFK, 90.7 FM on your dial. And I'm Jim Lafferty along with Bria Hall. And now we're going to turn to the question of the immigrant raids that the president is promising us. Trump's draconian plans, really, to deport. Well, he claims he's going to deport millions of undocumented immigrants living in the United States. And, of course, that's sown fear in the minds of our immigrant sisters and brothers, as expected. And many, in fact, have flown the country simply because they are afraid that if they stay, they will be arrested and deported. So they're leaving ahead of time to avoid that, sadly. Others are not showing up for work. Instead, they're staying close to home again for fear of the ICE agents. School teachers report their students are living in fear that if they come to school, what happens if they go home and their parents have been deported, for God's sakes? Can you imagine a school child having to deal with that and therefore not going to school? How is that in anyone's interest, for God's sakes? Student absences are way up at a lot of public schools. They're afraid of the ICE agents, as I say, conducting raids even in the school themselves, something that was a no-no up until now, at least. All of this despite the fact that far from taking jobs from Americans, immigrants are merely performing jobs American citizens have shown they simply will not do. And contrary to Trump's claims about immigrants and criminality, the fact, of course, is, and it's just another one of his lies, the fact, of course, is undocumented immigrants commit crimes at a much lower rate than do American citizens. And of course, they contribute far more dollars to the U.S. economy than they get back, since they pay all sorts of taxes, but not entitled to the benefit the taxes pay for, including, I might add, Social Security benefits. Well, in a number of communities where there is a large population of undocumented immigrants, immigrants and their supporters have joined together to devise ways of avoiding detection and arrest by ICE agents seeking their deportation. Los Angeles, as a city that has stood up for immigrants more than some cities have done, not enough, but more than some cities have done, is, of course, exactly such a community. So today we've invited a leading spokesperson from a coalition of immigrant support groups that have pledged to warn immigrant communities in L.A. when ICE is conducting raids in an effort to thwart ICE's attempt to find, arrest, and deport our immigrant sisters and brothers. Our guest is Ron Goches. Mr. Goches is a leading member of and a spokesperson for the Union del Barrio, a political group that has now built a coalition of 60 organizations that, quote unquote, are united on the issue of defending migrants and immigrants. Ron Goches is employed as a high school history teacher. A warm welcome, Ron Goches, to the Lawyers Guild show, my friend. And Ron, yes, there you go. He took off his. By the way, before we begin our conversation with Ron, I want to mention again that this past Sunday, there was a pro-immigrant rights rally here in L.A. at which people were arrested, including, I'm proud to say, although they shouldn't have been arrested, there was no need to arrest them, I'm proud to say, some of the young legal observers from my own organization and Maria's organization, the National Lawyers Guild, but they're going to be taken care of. Well, let's start with the questions for you, Ron. Tell us a bit about this new Community for Self-Defense Coalition. The LA Times reported it had 60 member groups. Who are some of these groups?
Yeah, thank you so much for the invitation, for having us on the show. It really is a pleasure and honor for us to participate here today. Union del Barrio made the call a couple of months ago to form this coalition because we knew very clearly that there isn't a single organization in LA with the capacity to deal with this issue on its own. And we know that there's many different groups that really care about this issue of ICE raids and deportations and family separations, et cetera. So we made the call for a coalition to be joined, and dozens of organizations quickly came to participate and join the coalition. And so it took the name of the Community Self-Defense Coalition. Really, what we're trying to push for is the concept that we can defend ourselves, the concept of self-defense. We know that these attacks are very particular against our community. When I say our, I'm talking about the indigenous people of this continent. And so we make that a point because although we work shoulder to shoulder with our immigrant brothers and sisters from all over the world, at least for our community here, we're not immigrants. And we make a very clear point of that. We are migrants because we have our indigenous homeland. And so we have migrated these territories for thousands of years before there ever was a country called the United States. And so these organizations, I'll name a few. There's Jewish Voice for Peace. There's Black Men Build. There are the People Struggle in San Fernando Valley. There is Centro CSO from Boyle Heights, Association of Raza Educators. There's so many. There's more than 60.
Wonderful.
And so we have different focuses. Not every group focuses on immigration, but on this issue, we do unite. And so that's how we're working together. And what we did as Union del Barrio is that we provided training for something that we feel is a really powerful tool that we can use to defend our communities. And that is doing community patrols. We learned from the history of the Black Panther Party, who used to do their own community patrols, looking out for police who would terrorize the Black community. And so we started doing something very similar. So we drive around and combing through the streets of Los Angeles, looking for any ICE activity. When we find it, we alert the community with megaphones. We let everyone know what's happening. We tell them to stay indoors if they're undocumented. You know, don't talk to the officers, don't open your door, don't open your windows, nothing. However, if people who are listening in the neighborhood who are documented, we ask them to come out and to join us to defend their neighbors so they aren't kidnapped by these ICE agents. And that has proven to be successful numerous times. These patrols, we've been doing them all over San Diego, North County, San Diego, Los Angeles, and now even just in, it started in Riverside and other places. And so the concept of community patrols is spreading. The concept of self-defense is spreading. It's not a new idea. It's not a novel thing. It's just something that we want people to really have the attitude that, you know, although it is very scary for many people in our community, we can't let fear paralyze us. We have to be able to use that fear and anger and frustration and turn it into organizing to defend everybody in the community. So that's what we have.
Excellent.
Filipino folks, Black folks, white folks, Jewish folks. We have all kind of people who are participating, and it's really a beautiful thing.
Great.
Well, Ron, there was a leaked report from the FBI that suggested ICE planned major raids here in LA sometime last month, but it didn't take place that way. I'd assume that for this new coalition to be successful, it would need some notice that a raid was coming or was taking place. How quickly could the coalition mobilize and get to a location where the raid is taking place? And are you confident there can be enough time where the coalition could get there and be of help?
That's a great question. Thank you for that. So because we got word, of course, of that LA Times leak, that document that said that there would be these massive raids, we kind of assumed that once it was leaked that they wouldn't carry out massive raids because they knew that we would know. However, we weren't going to take our chances. And so we had an emergency training where we trained over 50 organizations on how to do the community patrols, at least kind of like the intro, like the basics of the community patrols. And so on that Sunday, where it was rumored, it was the 23rd, I believe, February 23rd, that it was rumored that they were going to start massive raids, we launched our community patrols. On that day, more than 150 people throughout Los Angeles patrolled the streets. I'm not kidding when I tell you this, that within the first 10 minutes of the patrols, we found two ICE operations, and we were in totally different parts of the city. One was in Alhambra and the other one was in the city of San Fernando. And so totally opposite sides of the city, we had people patrolling everywhere. And in both of those cases, we're proud to report that we were able to successfully defend those communities and nobody was taken. And so we do feel confident, not just at the fact that we're patrolling and that we can find ICE activity, but we also are confident because the masses of the people are supporting this work and they call us with information. They call us anytime they see any suspicious activity, vehicles they don't recognize, vehicles that look like undercover vehicles. And so because we've also done trainings for the public on how to identify undercover ICE vehicles, the public is now better informed. And so they call us with information. And that's when, because we do have organizations all the way from Venice Beach to Lancaster to San Pedro to San Fernando Valley, they're everywhere. When we get a call about possible ICE activity, we call the organization closest to that area and they can go and verify to see if it is truly ICE activity. Mm-hmm. We've gotten false flags. We've gotten undercover sheriffs, undercover LAPD. We even got a park ranger one time, but people are afraid, so they think anybody's ICE now. And so we have been able to cover a lot of not just LA City, but LA County. And now it's growing because now we are in Inland Empire and San Diego as well.
Amazing, amazing. Well, Ron, with respect to this issue of helping undocumented immigrants avoid detection and arrest and deportation, there are, of course, laws against interfering with ICE and other policing officials as they attempt to do their dirty work. But nevertheless, I understand coalition members are willing to be quite bold, really, in trying to and succeeding in preventing arrests and deportations from taking place. So how would you describe the tactics that coalition members are employing and will employ if they've been trained in such a way so as to avoid exposing themselves to liability? Talk to us about that issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a perfect opportunity to mention one of the organizations that we're very proud that are part of the Community Self-Defense Coalition is the National Lawyers Guild. And so we think that's extremely important that we have legal support. Besides the Lawyers Guild, there's also other attorneys that are part of the coalition that can help us. And we've had meetings already just in case, you know, any one of our people get apprehended or whatever for this work that we're doing. But we in no way, shape, or form are trying to become martyrs. We are not trying to become ninjas or superheroes or Superman, and we're not trying to do that. We're trying to inform the community of ICE presence. We're trying to inform the community of their rights to not speak to officers, to not open their doors, etc. So we know absolutely without any type of doubt that we are doing everything within our legal power to inform the community and to defend the community. With that being said, we clearly understand the nature of the beast, and only because we're doing things legally doesn't mean that we can't be repressed. And so we do try, and you know, as much as we can, to be careful, of course, as my mother always reminds me to be. And also, we record everything. We always have cameras, our cell phones, GoPros. So if anything does happen, it will be on tape. A lot of the times when we do encounter ICE activity, we directly go live on social media. That way it will stay recorded on there just in case something bad were to happen. But we, when we do our trainings, we let everyone know we're doing everything legally, because we don't have the capacity to have a bunch of our folks arrested. And we just, that's not our goal. That's not our mission. There's a place and a time for that, but what we're doing is not that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's why we feel confident that the work that we're doing has the support of the majority of the people of Los Angeles. I'm not going to lie, sometimes it is scary. These agents are armed, and under the current political climate, they feel completely emboldened. And so we know that that may lead to them taking actions that can be harmful to us. But, you know, we know that somebody has to defend the community. Someone has to do this work. And we're stepping up to the plate, and we're fighting for the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a follow-up to that, you spoke to the risks that, you know, that you're letting people know what the risks are. You're not, you know, a Pollyanna in saying that, you know, oh, of course, they're going to all abide by the law, these ICE agents, because we know the reality is they may not. But have the people doing the work been advised of the risks? And I assume it's strategic so that you're not putting the most vulnerable people out there visible. Is that right?
That is correct. When we do the trainings, that's why one of the major reasons why we really want to really only train organizations and not individuals is for that reason, because it is a mid to almost high level risk factor. And so if someone does get arrested, if you're completely on your own, you don't have backup. You don't have an organization to back you up, to bail you out, to have maybe connections to legal advice, et cetera. So we really want to provide trainings to organizations that have a little bit of organizational capacity. But yes, we let them know what the risks are, and we let them know that we're not intending to do anything illegal. And so that's really what I think lets us know that regardless of whether we're scared or not, the work has to be done. We do not ever recommend for someone who is undocumented or someone who has, you know, any type of legal troubles to participate in this work for obvious reasons. We're not going to tell people not to. We can't tell people what to do, but we would recommend that people who do this, you know, have your car registration in order, have your tags, you know, in order, have your all, you know, those kinds of things, because we don't want our people getting stopped and harassed for things of that nature. So we don't want to get anyone in trouble. We want to be responsible with what we do. And I think that we're doing that so far.
Excellent. Excellent. You know, it's wonderful, of course, and I know how well you've trained the folks that are going to be doing this work. One of the things that sticks in my craw that makes me so unhappy, and we've tried to do something about it, the Lawyers Guild, you've tried to do something about it, it's the need of the entire community. I mean, if you think about the huge population of migrants, immigrants who are undocumented, or documented for that matter, I mean, they've been picking up people around the country who they had no legal right to pick up, in fact, who were here in a perfectly lawful, quote unquote, way. But the average person, be they a migrant or be they a citizen born in the United States, is unaware of just how strong a right they have to not be not engage with ICE agents, period. And I've heard, you know, reports when I was still working as the executive director of the Los Angeles chapter of the Guild here, I would frequently get calls from somebody. And why had they gotten into trouble? Well, because some ICE agent, maybe not wearing any weapon, would walk up onto the street and simply very pleasantly, nice day, isn't it? Oh, gee, where are you off to? Oh, yeah, I got to get some groceries too. My God, yeah, no, I noticed that accent. I've got an uncle with that accent. What country are you from anyway? Oh, I'm from El Salvador. Really? Well, and then next thing you know, they were on a bus being deported. Your point, you made it in passing. But every immigrant listening to this show, everybody who employs immigrants who may be undocumented listening to this show, you have an obligation to let your friends and employees know that they have an absolute right and that the only thing they should possibly do when confronted by someone in the street who starts asking them those kinds of questions is absolutely nothing. Am I right, Ron?
Yes. And that is an important training that we've done for years and years and years. Many organizations have done for the community. And I think that's one of the reasons why poor Tom Homan, the guy in charge of ICE, is complaining at press conferences that it's so difficult now for ICE to apprehend people. Because he says that people are well informed now.
Yeah.
And they know their rights. And so knowing their rights is really important. And this is a testament that it is important for people to know their rights. However, in the coalition, what we say is that, you know, George Floyd had rights.
Yeah.
But did that matter? You know, so it's not only knowing your rights, it's knowing how to defend your rights.
There you go.
So I'll give you an example. Almost 2 weeks ago, here in South Central LA, where I work, in Pico Union and in historic Filipino town, there were ICE raids all over LA on that day. ICE kicked in people's doors and went into their properties without showing warrants.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
And so not only is that a clear violation of the law, but even if the people at those homes did know their rights, what difference would that make once they have kicked in your door? And here in South Central LA on 41st and Avalon, they actually didn't just kick in the door. They kicked in the door and then they shot in gas canisters, tear gas, and there was women and children inside.
My God.
So at that situation, knowing your rights is almost irrelevant because they're going to do whatever they want to do. So what we say is knowing how to defend your rights. That means being prepared. That means letting all of your neighbors know, have a phone tree so that in case you see something suspicious, send a quick message and all your neighbors will get the information. You know, have a plan, have a family plan in case something like that happens. Know who is going to answer the door and who shouldn't answer the door. Those are things that are so important that you can do prior to contact with an ICE agent that can really make the difference between your family being separated or not. And so I think people are now losing a little bit of the fear. They're knowing their rights. And we saw that beautiful case out of Alabama, of all places. That worker, I don't know if you saw the video, went viral on social media. He was a roofer. He was working on the roof. And he told the ICE agent, who took about 8 of his coworkers, he said, "If y'all want me, come and get me." And he stayed on the roof, and he did not move. The ICE agents were too cowardly to go on the roof. So he waited for 6 hours until they left, and then he ran off into the woods. That's self-defense. That says, we're going to fight back. We're not going to allow ourselves to be kidnapped. And that's the attitude that we want our people to have.
That's right. Oh, that's wonderful.
Wow. Yeah, that really, when you use the word kidnapped, I think that expresses, when I do speak to people who aren't familiar with the issue, they ask, well, what's the worst that can happen? And I think the word kidnapped is a word that we don't like to use when we're talking about the rule of law. But indeed, that is what people are afraid of. One of the many things. So speaking on that, and what you just mentioned, many of us do know and care and love people without papers in our lives. So do you have some suggestions about how individuals can help spread reliable information, some of the information that you're talking about here? How can we share it with people we know who might really not know that they have constitutional rights? And of course, what to do if their rights are being violated?
Yes. So I think one of the things that's really important is to share the information about these Know Your Rights trainings. Many, many different organizations throughout Los Angeles provide these trainings. I think ours are a little bit different because they say we don't just inform people about their rights. We inform them about how to protect their rights.
Yes.
Having a family plan, having a phone tree with all of your coworkers, people from your church, people who live on your block, your neighbors, et cetera. Those are things that people can do to just in case something happens, have a plan. And also part of a plan that's super important is if in case something were to happen where you see ICE on your block or even at your door, have the phone numbers of organizations such as ours that you can call to back you up. What happens, and this is a really important point, when ICE shows up at people's doors, if they're there for several minutes asking you to open up and pleading with you, we just want to ask you a couple questions. We just want to see this. We want to make sure there's no one here that blah, blah, blah. If they're at your door for that long and they haven't kicked it in, that means they don't have a warrant. If they had one, they already would have been in your house. And so we ask people to stall. And in the meantime, call us, Unión del Barrio, or any of the organizations in our coalition, and text all of your neighbors so that all of your neighbors who are documented can come out with their cell phones recording. And what we've seen plenty of times is that when ICE agents are at somebody's door and they are surrounded by the people, by the neighbors, they don't feel safe anymore and they leave. And then no one gets kidnapped. And that's what we're saying. That's what people can do to protect their rights, to know their rights, but also to protect their rights.
And what is the website again where they can get a lot of good information of this coalition?
So they can find us on Instagram. The coalition is so new, we don't even have a webpage yet.
Okay.
But they can find us on Instagram at Community Self-Defense Coalition. For Unión del Barrio, they can find us at Unión del Barrio on Facebook or on Instagram. And a lot of people get information that way. We've been holding a ton of trainings on Zoom in Spanish and English. And so people can get this information. And sometimes a lot of the people who join them, they themselves maybe are not, they're not undocumented, but their friends and family and neighbors are. And it's important for them to know that information as well.
By the way, pretty much running out of time, but I wanted to ask you this question. In the past, I'm thinking when the Sensenbrenner bill was pending, and, you know, a million immigrants took to the streets of L.A. and protests. It was an amazing day. Any big immigrant rights marches planned, given what the Trump administration is trying to now do?
Yeah, we're still going to have marches like we've done for many, many years. And you're right, there was a huge march, you know, the in 2006, 2007, 2008. Yeah. However, I think we have to learn from that history. We had massive marches, but then the next day after the marches, there was hardly any organization on the ground.
Aha.
And that's what the huge mistake was. So this time we're trying to change that. So right now we're mobilizing towards May 1st. Every year, of course, May 1st is the big deal. And this year we have something a little different. We're not just doing a march. We're doing a march, but we're also training people for self-defense and using the march as a recruitment ground to get workers, everyday working class people, to participate in organized struggle, not just going to a march, but being part of organizations and meetings and trainings and really building the capacity of the working class to defend themselves, because this is going to happen for 4 years or longer if we allow it.
Well, Ron, I have to tell you, Maria, I know you're shaking your head the same. I'm so proud of L.A. God knows there are days when I, you know, despair because of city government or whatever. But the people of L.A., I'm so proud of the people of L.A. It's patronizing to say I so admire what you're doing, what so many people in L.A. are doing on behalf of our immigrant sisters and brothers. It is a beautiful thing to see. And by the way, the numbers so far that ICE, not only here, but around the country, they've been small numbers. They have not actually been equal to the numbers that Obama was having picked up day by day by day. That's why he ended up getting the reputation of being the deporter in chief. They're running on par, maybe, for where Trump was in his first term, but they're running actually behind. So this notion that millions are going to be gathered up, not if people do what Ron has been suggesting on our show today, not if people follow the advice, and these coalitions are forming all over the country in cities and communities where there are a lot of migrants, a lot of undocumented immigrants. And Ron Goetjes, I know what you've done here is, I think, a classic example that the rest of the country should emulate if they haven't done so yet. Our show gets reached all the way up the state and all the way down the state. I know there's some other groups in the state, but in communities where there are a lot of sisters and brothers who face danger from ICE, please do reach out to Ron. Reach out, as he suggested, you can reach out to him on Instagram, because it's possible, I think, that they would give you some help in terms of forming something in your own community. Am I right about that, Ron?
Absolutely. There's about 6,000 ICE agents nationwide. There's millions and millions of us. If we organize ourselves, we can defend ourselves. And for Los Angeles, not only do we want to defend our people here, we also have to know the Trump administration and ICE, if they can hit Los Angeles and get away with it, they will go and hit the entire country because feel that they can. So we have the responsibility to show them that we can fight back, we can defend our communities, we can win, and that'll hopefully inspire the rest of the nation to also to put up a strong fight so that Tom Homan can continue to complain about how so difficult to kidnap our people, because we're not going to let them.
Oh my God, that's so wonderful. Ron Goetschez, you've been doing wonderful work of this type for a long, long, long time. You're doing it again. And so is this wonderful coalition that you're a part of. We congratulate you. We congratulate them. Please extend to them all of our good wishes. We're out of time now, I'm afraid. But Ron Goetschez, we thank you so much for joining us here today. We've been inspired by it.